So we've been following for, I don't know, I can't remember how many weeks it is, this theme of integration. So we've got another couple of weeks on integration. So tonight I'm picking up, so quite a lot of you, I think, were here for Subhadramati's talk. And one of the things that you may remember if you were here that she talked about was her experience of ordaining somebody. And so she was on a Spanish mountain and she was about to ordain somebody. So, and she experienced a great doubt in herself. So she spoke about her experience of that. And Suryodaya kind of asked her at the end when we had questions, you know, kind of how she'd resolved it a bit. So I thought it would be good to explore how a bit more, a bit further, this doubt. Partly because I really like this. Sangharakshita in this book, Know Your Mind, which is a really good book. If you haven't looked at that, we've got copies on the bookshelf. He lists indecision as being one of the forces of disintegration. So, a force of disintegration. Actually, in the introduction to that section in Know Your Mind, it says, well, this is from the Abhidharma. Indecision is to be in two minds about the truth. So if we're in two minds, then we're not integrated. Yeah. But I mean, most of the time I'm in far more than two minds. That's just two. So I'm just going to start with a little quote, which, funnily enough, I've had on my on the bot, you know, that email. You can put little things on your signature on your email, can't you? So this is what it says on the bottom of my email signature, and it's a quote from an Italian poet and philosopher, Giacomo Leopardi. Human reason cannot find the truth without doubting. It distances itself every time it judges with certainty. The person who doubts knows. I'll read that again. Human reason cannot find the truth without doubting. It distances itself every time it judges with certainty. The person who doubts knows. And I suppose it particularly, when I read that, it particularly resonated with me, because, well, I suppose two things. Partly because I do experience doubt in myself. I don't experience that much, like, doubt in the teachings of the Dharma. But it manifests as doubt in myself. In fact, I was remembering not that long before I was, probably not that long before I was ordained, I said to, I think it was one of my spiritual friends, one of my Kalyanamitras, I said, "Oh, I've got complete doubt in the Dharma. I just haven't got doubt in, I've just got doubt in myself." And she said, "Well, if you've got doubt in the Dharma, if you've got doubt in yourself, you have doubt in the Dharma, because the Buddha said that you too can get enlightened." I was like, "Oh, yeah, okay." Yeah. So if we have doubt in ourselves, in fact, we doubt the Dharma, we doubt the Buddha, we doubt the Buddha principle. And then this second line, it distances itself every time it judges with certainty. That really grabbed me viscerally in my body, because I I really feel that when I'm doubting, what happens is I just get into this kind of horrible staccato, kind of rigid, sort of judgmental kind of state. And it's when I'm in doubt, I go into this sort of kind of iced up kind of state where, in order to defend myself from the forces of my own doubt, I kind of go, no, this is how it is, and this is how I am, and this is how you are. Those of you who know me will be completely familiar with this. So, so that really grabbed me. So maybe close your eyes for a moment. I'm just going to pose a couple of questions to you. Have you ever been thrown into doubt? Great doubt, even. So maybe something you believe to be true, and then you find that it's not. Maybe you've heard someone you respect, maybe a Buddhist, maybe Sangharakshita, say or do something, and then they seem to say or do something contradictory. So just really noticing that experience, your own experience, noticing how that is in your body, what's going on in your mind. Okay, so I just encourage you so I'm going to talk for about another 20 minutes. But I just really encourage you to, as you listen to me, just to really check back in with your own experience, yeah? If something has come to mind, or you've got a kind of felt experience of doubt, just keep on coming back to that, because then what I say is going to fall on your own experience more, if that makes sense. And well, I suppose also just always remembering that the Buddha said, don't do what I say, test it in your own experience. So I suppose that's what I'm calling you to do. I'm going to say some things, and I just want you to call to test in your own experience, for the awareness that you have now, is that true for me or not? Okay, so my own experience is that when I experience this doubt, when I experience this kind of tension between two things that seem oppositional, that it throws me back on myself. And these paradoxes are that I can only resolve in my own experience. They make me delve deeper into my own spiritual practice. And my experience is that Buddhist practice, in its nature, brings up doubts. It's a nature of a dynamic of Buddhist practice, is that it brings up doubts. And I know we've already talked about this actually in this season, and you know we talk about it quite a lot here. You know the that image of the Buddha is just about to kind of gain enlightenment, and he's being bombarded, you know, by his own doubts. Yeah. Right, so right up to the last minute, folks. Yeah. So I was thinking, I experience doubts on kind of, well, I'm sure there's all sorts of different levels, but the two major levels that I kind of I can relate to. So there's the sort of more surface or superficial level of what I'm calling choice, and a deeper level of faith. So on the surface level, this is chronic confusion. So I'll just give you an example. So on Friday, oh no, actually, I've written Friday, but wasn't it, it was Thursday. I do know it was Thursday. So on Thursday, should I travel up to Adistana for the order weekend, even though there's been a red weather warning? I don't believe these weather forecasts anyway. They're always a load of rubbish. My idea of a weather forecast, open the door, look outside. Am I getting wet? You know, do I need to put some suntan cream on? What cycling gear do I need to wear? That's my idea of weather forecast. So, but what happened is I had this kind of... so I was texting Satchalila about it. I said, so on a feeling level, it's just a no. And on a cognitive level, it's just a no. Well, you know, three order members risking their life to go on an order weekend, I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't it? You know, why would we do that? You know, better off stay at home. And I don't tend to think things through. I imagine them through. So I thought, like, can you imagine packing your panniers, cycling either to a Biomaitre's house around the corner from here in all this snow, or cycling to Temple Meads? No, I just can't imagine it. But there was still something there that was... So I still couldn't just text a Biomaitre and Satchali and just say, I'm not going. There was still something there. There was still some kind of sort of doubt or passivity in me. Is this the right thing? You know, kind of. And what I did was, I thought, it was like I can still feel it now that I'm talking to you. So I could feel it here on my right arm. I could feel that there was some other kind of response going on that was just putting me into all of this doubt. I don't exactly know what that is, but I was talking to Joy about it yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yesterday. So I was talking to Joy, and she said, yeah, it's a bit like when you're talking about it, your head is just kind of going to one side, you know, so there's this kind of avoidance. Mm. So there was something that I was avoiding. I was putting off this final decision. So what I did was I just thought, okay, well, I've just noticed that there's this sort of some kind of sensation in my right arm. I know what that is. I'm used to working with that. This is where all my kind of judgmental kind of side comes from. So I just need to kind of like move towards that, feel that more kind of... And also just sharing it with friends. So I talked to Joy about it. I talked to not this Alison, the other Alison. I talked to Dharmamrita. So just talking about it and exploring. And of course, those people all know me. So they know the chances are they'll have seen this in me over many years, and they'll kind of go, and they'll be able to. Well, they were all able to help me to reflect me back. So I'm not saying I don't have an answer, but I'm just saying these are ways that I kind of explore so that I can just turn towards, just keeping turning towards it more and more. Um, And Sangharakshita is very clear, actually, about this kind of chronic confusion, this kind of level of doubt. He says that what we need to do is we need to grow up by taking responsibility. And it's been interesting that the past sort of, I don't know, quite a few years, I've had this real kind of yearning that, oh, I just want to be more mature. I just want to grow up. I feel so embarrassed sometimes that I'm so immature. Me and Badra over the last few days have been writing some horrible, you know, really immature emails to each other. But yeah, but, and you know, it's horrible, isn't it? Oh, well, you maybe not like that, but anyway, it is for me. You know, and then you have to sit and sort it out, you know, kind of all that. So there's something in me just wanting, it's like I know that I can be more mature. And in fact, it's interesting, Sangharakshita says that often, you know, people who, I don't have children, but Sangharakshita says, you know, people who often have children or other people who are dependent on them grow up more. They grow up through doing that. They have to take on the kind of the responsibility of having children, or, you know, other people who are dependent on you. And so obviously there's loads of ways that we can grow up. There's loads of ways we can take responsibility. But maybe those of us who don't have people who are dependent on us have to work harder, you know, to find a way of really taking responsibility. Yeah, and somehow it feels quite tragic to me not to grow up. And I was thinking, Sangharakshita, you might have heard this term, uses this term, becoming a true individual. And I was kind of thinking, oh yeah, this is an aspect of becoming a true individual, is to grow up, to mature, to take responsibility. And in fact, when I was thinking about it, a way that I did relate to it, I remember, I think it was my first order weekend. Obviously, it wasn't any snow that weekend. So I went on this order weekend, and my trainee gave a talk, and she was saying, when we give the Dharma, we get to know ourselves in a way that we didn't before. And it's certainly been my experience, because I have to sit here, I've had to be thinking over this past week or something. I'm going to be sitting talking to all of you. And so, I mean, that's a big responsibility. So I do feel like I have grown up through taking that on. Not always easily. And it always brings up my doubts. Whenever I lead anything here at the end, I go up to the shrine and I just kind of remind myself that whatever I've done, even if I think it's rubbish, you know, I don't usually think it's rubbish, but, you know, even if I think, oh, why did I say that? Or why didn't I, you know, I go up to the shrine and I just remind myself that I'm just doing what I think the Buddha would want me to be doing in the way that I can. I'm doing what Sangharakshita, my teacher, wants me to be doing. And I can only do what Karunavarpi can do. Okay, so that's the sort of more superficial level of doubt, which is, you know, probably what I'm working with, you know, kind of most of the time, even though I'm not necessarily aware of it. So the deeper level of doubt, curiously, is actually what comes from faith. And so faith is something that I experience as an arising of a deep commitment to my spiritual life, a vision of what's possible. That there's something far more mysterious, something far safer, which urges me to commit myself to spiritual life. But this practice has created, it does create doubt, a kind of deep questioning. But my experience is that this kind of deeper level of doubt is actually implicit in faith. I don't know who said this, Pranyamati can tell us later, but about doubt being, that there's always doubt. Yeah, I mean, maybe what I already said about, you know, the Buddha being assaulted by doubt, even, you know, on the, just before he got enlightened, is a good example of that. There's always doubt right up until one is enlightened. Faith gives rise to doubt. So like I said, so it's a dynamic of spiritual life. So in my teens, I was very confused and in a lot of turmoil. I tried to take my own life. I experienced deep questioning. In fact, I do remember being in the church choir. I can't remember believing in God, but I think one of my parents told me that I did. I'm not sure I believe them, but anyway, there you go. Apparently I did. Anyway, I was from a very unconventional family, and I wasn't conventional myself. I was quite an outsider. I certainly wasn't interested in a career, or I probably didn't even know what it was. I wasn't interested in children or marriage, and I was into punk after heavy metal. A mod for a bit, anyway. But the sort of question, I had this deep questioning which opened me up to a kind of to a longing. And but I didn't know what it was that I was longing for. And actually, I remember one day I was, I'm from Newcastle, and me and my friends had gone to the Lake District for a weekend or something. I mean, I don't know about this because I might have been on drugs, so who knows. But my experience was that I just had an experience of, it was like, sorry, I don't know when I say it, it can sound a bit like God stuff, but anyway. I had this experience of like a white light, but it was an experience in myself of this, it was like an experience of potential, of being pure, of metta. I mean, I didn't know what metta was, but it was just like, I was just free of all my troubles, and I was just really, really open. And I think that probably eventually actually led me to Buddhism quite a long time later. And I don't think that kind of deep questioning has gone away, actually. So I'm going to talk a little bit now about an 18th century Japanese Buddhist called Hakuin, about his teachings. So he talks of great determination, great faith, and great doubt in the Zen traditioning, which leads to great awakening. So Hakuin was born at the foot of Mount Fuji between Tokyo and Kyoto, and he was born into a Buddhist family. And at a young age, he experienced doubt. He was overwhelmed by impermanence, change, restlessness. And I'm sure this will be familiar to at least some of you. Being overwhelmed by impermanence, that we're going to die. We're all of us in this room, we're all going to die. So Hakuin was drawn to the Buddhist teachings, but he experienced an enormous uncertainty, and he wanted certainty. And I suppose, as I said earlier, I could really relate to this. I get really overwhelmed by confusion. I get this sort of spiritual despair, and then I want something safe. So those of you who were here a few weeks ago when I talked at the Aram Parinirvana Festival, in China, Buddhist monasteries got attacked periodically. And Hakuin heard about how some great Chinese Buddhist master had got attacked and killed in his monastery because he wouldn't leave. You know, I don't know, they wanted to take it over or something, and he wouldn't leave. And for Hakuin, this story was devastating, and he fell into a despair because what it showed him was not even a great Buddhist monk could be saved from the torture of death, or from a tortured death, in fact. So he questioned how he could then be saved. So he decided he was going to give it all up. I'm going to give it all up. Gave up his goal of becoming enlightened, lost his faith, and he was just tortured by doubt instead. So when I was kind of remembering that, I thought, oh yeah, it does. It echoes my own experience of kind of feeling let down. Feeling let down by Sangharakshita or my spiritual friends or the way the Dharma's presented. But most of all, feeling let down by myself. I'm not a good Buddhist, or I'm not as good as other Buddhists. And this is just another manifestation of kind of my main sort of view of self, wrong view of self that I work with. I'm not good enough. I'm not as good as other people. So I look for this to be affirmed kind of internally or externally. So with Hakuin, what happened is he was undertaking absorption practice. That's what he did, that's what he taught. What he taught was the greater the doubt, the greater the faith. So great faith and great doubt being two aspects of the same mind of awakening. So what he said was that the mind of total self-doubt, it doesn't no longer classifies intellectually. And what he described this as being a state of being frozen in a great crystal. Wow, it's a strong image, isn't it? Being frozen in a great crystal. So I'm just going to quote here. Suddenly, so this is Hakuin. So suddenly a great doubt manifested itself before me. It was as though I were frozen solid in the midst of an ice sheet extending tons of thousands of miles. A purity filled my breast, and I could neither go forward nor retreat. To all intents and purposes, I was out of my mind. It was as though I were hearing from a distance. At times I felt as though I were floating through the air. And then in this state, Hakuin's it's really strong image, isn't it? And then all of a sudden, so he was experiencing terrific doubt, and then all of a sudden something else broke through, or the bell broke through into his psyche. And he just, well, I mean, we use that term, don't we? Snap out of it. He snapped out of it. And his self-doubt was complete, was extinguished. But that wouldn't have happened, you know, if he hadn't. It's like he had to go through that whole process to experience the level, to get to the level of what he terms great, great faith. He couldn't have got to that without having allowed himself to experience the great doubt. So, because of his experience, Hakuin emphasised the practice of sitting in absorption rather than focusing on intellectual teachings. So we have the practice of the mindfulness of breathing. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not the only way that we can practice absorption, but we can practice the mindfulness of breathing. Now, Hakuin demanded three things from his followers. So he demanded great faith in the Dharma, but he also demanded what is termed a great ball of doubt. A great ball of doubt. And then the third thing that he demanded was a great tenacity of purpose. So we need to be determined to stand the pain, to be willing to go, to experience to our doubt, willing to go there and explore what it is, not just continue avoiding it. So awakening is not it's not a kind of withdrawal in, you know, sometimes awakening can be described as a kind of withdrawal from the world, but what Hakuin was really emphasising, it's an engagement with the world, it's an engagement with oneself and how one really is, including an engagement with one's own doubt. So I'm going to give you an image. This is another way of describing what I'm trying to communicate is through this image. So you might want to just close your eyes if you haven't already. A lotus flower. If you don't know what a lotus flower is, just think of a lily. So a lotus flower. Its roots lie deep in the mud. It's in no way soiled by the mud. The lotus flower hasn't lost its wonderful scent and odour because its roots are in the mud. It smells sweet. Mm. The lotus's colour and fragrance exist essentially in it as it lies in the mud. As it emerges and as it blooms above the surface. Okay, so I'm just going to end by reading Hakuin's Song of Absorption, or Song of Samadhi. From the beginning, all beings are Buddha. like water and ice, without water, no ice, outside us, no Buddhas. How near the truth, yet how far we seek. Like one in water crying, I thirst. Like the son of a rich person, wandering poor on this earth, we endlessly circle the six realms. From dark path to dark path, we've wandered in darkness. How can we be free from the wheel of re-becoming? The perfection of freedom is absorption, samadhi. Beyond exaltation, beyond all our praises, the pure Mahayana. Observing the precepts, remorse and giving, the countless good deeds, and the way of right living, all flow from this absorption. Even one meditation extinguishes unskillfulness. It purifies karma, dissolving obstruction. Then, where are the dark paths to lead us astray? The pure lotus land is not far away. Hearing this truth, heart humble and grateful, to praise and embrace it, to practice its wisdom, brings unending blessings. If we turn directly and prove our true nature, that true self is no self, our own self is no self, we stand beyond ego and past clever words, then the gate to the oneness of cause and effect is thrown open. Not two, not three. Straight ahead runs the way. Now our form is no form. So in coming and going, we never leave home. Now our thought is no thought. So our dancing and songs are the voice of the Dharma. How bright and transparent the moonlight of wisdom. What is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. This earth where we stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha.